Signs of life for European companies could mean the economy of America's biggest trading partner is finally gathering some steam. From Marketplace in New York, I'm David Brancaccio. U.S. trade with Europe is more than double its trade with China, and so it is of note that the European stock market has had a pretty strong 2 weeks, at least judging from the Stoxx Europe 600 Index, stocks with two X's at the end. A key driver here is higher crude oil prices, with oil near $48 a barrel this morning. Brenda Kelly is head analyst at London Capital Group.
Well, it really all comes down to oil prices, and certainly the fact that we've seen oil prices hit a six-month high earlier this week, the fact that we're seeing some of the more bearish brokers standing more positive in the market is giving a certain amount of uplift to equities. And certainly today, the FTSE, the DAX and the CAC are all elevated on the back of this. And of course, it has carried through from Asia today, too.
But when it comes to Europe, there's always plenty to worry investors or anyone who has a job or wants a job.
We have a lot of risk elements coming up this summer, not least the EU referendum here in the UK, but you also have the presidential election over in the US. You know, between the end of July and the end of October generally gives you an indication as to which party will win. So if markets rise between the 31st of July and the 31st of October, the general belief is that the incumbent party will win, and if they fall, then the belief is that a new party will take over. And generally speaking, within the first year of a presidency, it does tend to show the actual S&P 500 falling. Statistically speaking, the S&P 500 could drop from here.
Brenda Kelly at London Capital Group. Let's check the current numbers. The 100-share index in London is up 0.2%. The DAX in Germany is up 0.4%, but Dow, S&P, and NASDAQ futures are mixed, with the Dow future up slightly and the NASDAQ future up slightly as well. Back in 1998, tobacco companies settled with U.S. states for the way they advertised and promoted smoking over the years. Under the terms of that deal, the firms had to pay states in perpetuity. But calculating just how much has been in dispute for years, and that could remain in dispute, local governments borrowed money based on those payments. But the bond rating service Fitch now says it cannot calculate the risk for the $34 billion municipal bond market, the ones related to tobacco. Fitch says it won't rate those tobacco bonds anymore. Hi, David Brancaccio here. Thank you for listening to the Marketplace Morning Report. We give you the context we think you need to understand what's happening in the economy and why it matters to you. Some context on us: we are a nonprofit service and rely on donations from our listeners to keep going. Your gift in any amount will be automatically doubled this month, thanks to the generosity of Newman's Own Foundation. And we've just made special Let's Do the Numbers Pilsner glasses available to thank you for your support. Donate today at marketplace.org. Street of Eternal Happiness is the name of a new book that's out today, written by my colleague, Marketplace's China Bureau Chief Rob Schmitz. His book was inspired by a year-long series he reported for us here on Marketplace. It follows the lives of individuals who dream, struggle, and grow along a single street in Shanghai. Rob joins us now from our studio situated along that very street in Shanghai. Morning, Rob.
Good morning, David.
My friend, you've been burning the midnight oil on this thing for, well, every time I call, you're in the middle of writing, and I had to rouse you from your writing zone. Why do this?
We in the media tend to focus our China coverage on the country's communist leaders or on its massive dynamic economy. But what's often missing from those narratives are real Chinese people. The Chinese are global now. They travel to New York, Washington, Florida, and they now own homes in Seattle, Los Angeles, you name it. They're our neighbors. And I think it's crucial to understand who they are as individuals and where they come from.
So you talk to your neighbors along the Street of Eternal Happiness. Tell us about, I think, one of the youngest.
Yeah, the youngest character in my book is a man in his early 30s. His name is CK. He had a very tough childhood. He's an only child, and he has an abusive father. Later, he studied really hard, and he got a good job as a manager of a state-owned enterprise that built accordions, an instrument that he plays really well. But then after a few years, he just quit. And here's CK talking to me as part of my original Marketplace story about him.
My father was very angry with me. He kept calling me. He'd say, "You can't just resign like that. You're a manager of a state-owned company. This is the Iron Rice Bowl." I didn't know what I wanted to do with my life, but I knew it wasn't this.
Well, what did he want to do?
Well, first and foremost, he wanted to live life on his own terms, to be free from his parents and from the state. So he moved to Shanghai for a job with an Italian accordion maker. He learned how to build an accordion from scratch, made a very good salary, and he saved enough to run his own cafe along my street. It's a hangout place for artists like him. I found his journey and how he traveled it to be fascinating. And I think hundreds of millions of young Chinese like him now have similar paths.
What about the older generation out on your street?
Well, one of the oldest characters in my book is nearly 60, and how I came to meet him is pretty interesting. Friends of mine heard my radio series, and they'd come across a shoebox of old letters at a shop. And the letters dated back to the 1950s, and they were written between a man thrown into a labor camp for being a capitalist and his wife, who took care of their 7 children in a house on my street. I was able to find their only son. He's now nearly 60, and he lives one borough away from you there in Queens. He never got to know his father. His dad spent most of his life in prison. And when I asked the son if he blamed China's government for what happened, he had a pretty surprising answer.
His salary was good, and we could have all lived a stable life, but he was unsatisfied and wanted to make more. He should have known running his own factory was illegal.
Well, that's not what you expected him to say.
No, it wasn't. And, you know, the revolutionary campaigns of the Mao years were just madness, and that put millions of innocent people into prison. But what I learned and what his son already knew is that China is a land of constant change, and the people who succeed are the ones who pay very close attention to those changes. One day, capitalism might be fine, the next, it's not. I mean, you have to be good at sensing a change in the winds and adjusting to them quickly.
All right, Rob Schmitz, Marketplace's China Bureau Chief, and now author of Street of Eternal Happiness. Rob, thank you.
Thank you very much, David.
Our producers are Justin Ho, Katie Long, and Beatty Zhang. Our engineer this week is Charlton Thorpe. In New York, I'm David Brancaccio with the Marketplace Morning Report. From APM, American Public Media.
The world can be a confusing place for kids, and finding the words to explain it all can be tricky, too. Introducing Million Bazillion, a Webby-winning podcast from Marketplace that takes your kids on exciting adventures to answer the awkward and complex questions they have about money. Each week, we tackle hard-hitting inquiries from kid listeners like,
what is a college account and how does it work?
I want to know what unions are and what they are for.
Why does the U.S. have so much gold in Fort Knox and what do they use it for?
Help your kids understand how money fits into the world around us. Listen to Million Bazillion wherever you get your podcasts.